Blog Talk Radio.
How's everyone doing? Good.
Great.
I'm doing well.
Great to have you back.
Good to be back.
Yeah, forgive me. I'm doing a lot of traveling most weekends, so please forgive my absence.
No problem. No problem. It's always good to have both of you on, especially our technical expert who breaks everything down for everybody. And that's what we put in the body of the promo about Z being able to break down the fighting styles and you being able to talk about all other aspects of the fight game. So we put that up every week. Okay, let's start out with where are we with – I didn't take the substance. Maybe I did take the substance. Maybe I'm going to fight and maybe I'm not going to fight. What's your thoughts on that one?
Who are you referring to? I'm sorry.
A person who Billy Joe Saunders.
Billy Joe.
Oh, I haven't been on since. Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
So
they're waiting. They're waiting for Monday.
Yeah.
So what it really comes down to, and I don't know if you guys spoke on this last week, but Billy Joe Saunders scheduled for his fight with Demetrius Andre tested positive for a banned substance, a PED. What it is it was something that is allowed out of competition but not in competition. So not within the first 72 to 48 hours before or after the fight, depending on which regulating body you were speaking of. And this is specifically in the United Kingdom. So it's allowed out of competition by UCAD. It's allowed out of competition by the doping agency over there. However, the fight is being sanctioned by the Massachusetts Athletic Commission, State Athletic Commission. So they are the ones who are going to make the final determination. Obviously, if they had got to the, promoting a fight, the fight was announced, I think they consider – It's so many gray areas with the time frame, and with him being in the UK and being under that regulatory body, technically he didn't violate any type of law. However, this fight will be, I believe it's being tested. The test is being administered by WADA, so he would have broken the law, or WADA, I should say. So though he broke the law with WADA, he didn't break it in the UK. So it's going to be a lot of gray areas, meaning that if they really want the fight to happen, there's enough red tape around that to make that fight happen. If they don't want the fight to happen, then they have a very good excuse to get that title off of Billy Joe Saunders.
Sure. Z?
Ty basically summed it up. And just to put a little more information on it, as far as last week I alluded to Victor Conte, his interview with the Ring magazine on the matter. And as I said, I'm not going to go into how biased exactly he was because he mentioned he was working with Andre and everything. But one thing we do know is as far as the world of PEDs and that Victor Conte has crafted himself credible to. And with that said, he brought about a point to where you take out of competition, which I don't understand, in competition, out of competition. But you take out of competition substances, and then you go ahead and when you go test, you test clean. But those substances, they last for months and months. The effects of them last for months and months ahead. Afterward. So you could take it in July and, go ahead, take the test in September and have a fight in November. And you could test clean in September and you can still have the effects of those chemicals in your system during the fight.
And also what you have to consider too, Z, is what's in competition. Some regulatory bodies consider competition like the 72 hours surrounding the fight. But, competition doesn't prohibit training necessarily. So essentially what can happen is you can dope during training as long as you don't have certain things in your system during fight time. Now, obviously, with more strict testing, putting contracts, it prohibits it limits the fighter's capacity or ability to dope in training. However, there are certain many ways around that. One thing Zito said is that Victor Conte has become credible, and he has. But what's so great about Victor Conte is he's the most credible source of what's not credible. So whenever a guy says an excuse, Victor Conte could say, okay, that excuse is plausible. However, let me tell you what this is used for and why it would come out this way in the test because of certain masking agents that is a part of the cycle. Like he will explain everything to you. It's kind of almost like Zito said, in a way, he's so credible, he can break through when stories are incredible and we think they're credible. He's been able to do that now. And so, you know, I think, you know, Victor Conte has kind of been a good thing for trying to clean up the sport to a certain extent, you know, now that he's, you know, coming to boxing the way he has. But, again, to kind of paraphrase a little bit with what Zito was saying, is what it comes down to, though, is, you know, ultimately, you know, how do you define certain things, right? If you can benefit from it during training, then you don't necessarily need it in your, you know, need it during those fight hours that the regulatory body deems as in competition. So, I mean, that's something has to be done. You know what? When a fighter signs up for year-round voluntary testing, as Canelo has done, then you got to give the guy credit. That's the guy, you know, who, for the most part, is clean. All these other guys, you just don't know. Remember, you know, guys fight twice a year, three times a year. If you only got to be clean for, say, 48 hours each time, come on.
Hey, let me ask you something. You just mentioned Canelo Alvarez. There's a lot of talk. He is going to go one step down. He's going to fight Thomas Dallone. I'm sorry, he's going to fight Ricky Fielding on the 15th of December. And there's a lot of talk about him stepping down to do this. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, it's a step down competition level.
Right.
He's stepping up in weight to 168. Mm-hmm. He would be fighting for, you know, Rocky Fielding's 168-pound, you know, JBF junior varsity title. He's not a champion, but he has a belt.
Mm-hmm.
So Canelo would be able to connect the belt in another weight class should he win. I think what has to be said is you know, Canelo's going to get a lot of flack for stepping down in competition. But what has to be said is that his last two fights, though they took place a year apart, they were absolute wars. You know what I mean? Although I believe in both fights he punished Golovkin and put more damage on Golovkin than Golovkin did he, still was a very grueling fight. He suffered a cut. And, you know, I think he's owed a soft touch, and as well as I think Golovkin is too. Like, I know the WBC during a convention mandated that Canelo was able to make a voluntary defense and that Golovkin would have to fight Jermall Charlo, I should say, for the mandatory position.
Right.
Even that fight, that's a very interesting fight. I would much rather see Charlo against Golovkin at this point than I see Canelo against Golovkin. But even at this point, Golovkin doesn't need to necessarily fight Charlo right away. He could use another Vannis Matarossian soft touch kind of fight. You know what I mean? Because these guys have been through war. Career is finite, right? It's not infinite. The damage accumulates.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a smart business decision by Canelo, going to collect another strap. So there's something kind of on the line as opposed to just a stay busy fight. He could, you know, gain something out of it, be a three-division champion, or a titleist, I should say. So I think it's a pretty smart move, and I don't fault him or begrudge him or Gennady Golovkin if he were to take a similar type fight.
Zeke?
I basically summed it up. Fielding, he's a step down in competition. I mean, not to call anybody, you know, step down, but compared to Canelo, he is a step down in competition, although a step up in weight, which could make a difference. I mean, if you know, Canelo has never fought a live body at 168. So, I mean, and that's an 8-pound difference from, you know, now I'm not going to say, you know, how Canelo's body's going to be and all of that. But with that said, that gives Fielding an advantage. As far as anything else is concerned, you have the mandatories, your mandates. We have to just kind of wait to see how things play out. Just because until I see actual contract signed, actual promotions and contract signed, I'm not going to believe that Charlo and Golovkin are going to get in the ring at this very moment.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not looking that way. It's a lot of talk toward it, but in all actuality, I'm going to see Golovkin maybe against Spike O'Sullivan almost. You know, we'll get something like that before we'll get Charlo.
I agree, and I think before he would fight Charlo, you would see him say, you know, the hell with the WBC belt right now. Let me go ahead and fight the winner of Derevchenko Jacobs for the IBF mm-hmm. title, or fight the winner of the potential BJS. Andrade fight for BJS's title. So, yeah, I mean, he's got options, but
mm-hmm.
he's not, from what I read, too, he's not happy. Mauricio Suleiman, president of WBC, said Golovkin was planning on going into the trilogy fight, so he wasn't exactly happy about the mandated position and having to fight a fight to get that trilogy fight, which he, you know, figure was going to take precedence. And don't get it wrong. Step aside money. A lot of stuff could be happening. Charlo, to me, Jermall Charlo has not proved that he would step in the ring with Golovkin. Not that he's scared, but nothing about his career so far has shown me that Al Haymon and the guys are going to roll the dice and put him in with Golovkin. Simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
I see Golovkin saying yes to that fight if there's something on the line quicker than Charlo. I think Charlo's people could steer him in another more profitable direction, quite possibly, especially if they think they could get a Canelo fight through the back door without having to fight Golovkin. So,
mm-hmm.
like Zito said, I highly doubt we see that. And again, if Golovkin takes on not a soft touch, like Zito said, not a Spike O'Sullivan-esque kind of fighter, if he takes on a quality elite fighter, it's going to be for a title. It's not going to be for a mandatory position. I doubt that seriously, especially when he thinks, and, you know, and kind of in a sense, he should probably have all the titles or should have at least had an opportunity to unify all the titles. So I could see him going that route and also to gain more leverage for a potential rematch with Canelo. So I think Zito's absolutely right. It's not something you're going to see in the ring, I don't think. I'd be very surprised.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, the other one I wanted to ask you about was Eddie Hearn, of course, loves the press more than Mayweather. But he says if Chisora v. Wilder doesn't work, that he wants a fight with Luis Ortiz. What's your thoughts on that one?
Oh, you're talking about Dillon White.
Right.
Because I read that he's looking to make Dillon if the Wilder Fury right now what's going on is obviously you know the way it should obviously be is the Wilder Fury are looking to fight Joshua in April. However, it looks like Dillon White.
Hello?
Yeah. Uh-oh. Looks like Ty got dropped for some reason. Well, we're joined by Dr. Chris Panarella. Chris, Ty was just in the middle of talking about Dillon White and his next outing with, I guess, Eddie Hearn has offered him Luis Ortiz.
Wow. Well, Ortiz deserves another fight. He's not out of the picture. I think he's a good opponent now. Good, you know, he's at the point now probably in his life where he's going to have to, you know, you're going to have to get by Ortiz to deserve a title shot.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be that way, but now look, is the bout set for Deontay Wilder and. And the former champion?
No,
is that
at
set?
This point. Yeah. Oh, it has been set. Yeah, right. Go ahead, Ty.
Yeah. December 1st.
Oh,
yeah, December
1st,
yeah.
If I'm correct.
Wow. I wonder if what was the money involved in it? What are they discussing on money?
I don't know, but they didn't have a hard time hammering out a deal, though.
Okay. Well, that's good. I guess they both want to fight. They both want to fight. You know what? I don't think Wilder is afraid of the other guy, because he's not a big puncher. And he figures over the 12 rounds he's going to get a good right hand in there. So he's not really fearing the Tyson Fury. I don't think he's afraid of him at all. So we'll see what happens. That'd be a very interesting fight. He's going to fight a guy taller. At 6'7", he's going to fight a guy taller than him. That's unusual, you know?
Yeah.
And heavier. And a lot heavier. So we'll see. It doesn't. You know what? That weight doesn't seem to bother. I mean, he's outweighed every fight, but it doesn't seem to bother him.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't seem to bother Dante Wilder. He doesn't get in there and wrestle with you and mix inside. He's a distance puncher, so the weight doesn't bother him. You know. So.
Right.
Who's on tonight?
Terrence Jesse Vargas versus Thomas Delome, and then Arthur Bedivev against Johnson, Kellum Johnson, and then Big Baby Miller against Tomas Adamek. You know, Ty, let me ask you a question. Adamek came out of retirement again. He's got this fight now, and then he supposedly has one in December. You think that's isn't that a little pushing it a little hard?
I gotta say, if the guy could come through unscathed, then you know we've all of us on this phone have been in a ring, and you know if you could come through unscathed, which he is absolutely not fighting Big Baby Miller, but if he could, yeah, you could fight in December. But the fact of the matter is. Is win or lose, not at this stage, I don't think he beats Big Baby Miller, but win or lose, he's going to be getting hit a lot by big heavyweight.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a little ambitious to think he could come back in December, but at the same time, I think at this point in Tomas Adamek's life, he's not necessarily doing it for money. He's kind of a big, superstar in Poland. Part of the reason why he is on this card is because this card is taking place in Chicago. Chicago has a huge Polish contingency, so therefore he's probably getting paid a little bit more than he's worth to the card for the live gate right now. So I think for him, this is just what he likes to do. He's in pretty deep tonight at this stage in his career. As far as him fighting in December, he knows his body better than we do. But let's see how he looks tonight before we even evaluate whether he is capable of making it to December.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a Big Baby fan, but at this moment, I'm not a Thomas Adamek fan at this stage of his career either. And that's the bad part about it. Adamek, he's getting paid to be slaughtered as a sacrificial lamb just for the resume of Big Baby, who really doesn't deserve the resume. Thomas Adamek's name on his resume. As far as what Thomas Adamek has accomplished, his legacy. Where is he going right now? What is he doing with his career? Is a guy 21 years old and he's coming up that slow? He steps in the ring. I have a respect for him. But the way he's conducting his promotion or whatever, he's bolstering off of nothing. He's getting essentially kind of making money off of nothing where other fighters have earned more. But ultimately, this is the show. As hard blood, sweat, and tears as this is, ultimately, boxing's a show. And sometimes people, they want to see clowns. And to be honest, the way he's conducting actual boxing is a clown show. All it is. He's not bona fide. He's not a bona fide contender. There we go. He's not a bona fide contender. I don't see why, I don't think he deserves Thomas Ledeff. Simple as that. He's going to kill him, but I don't think he deserves.
You know what? I completely, just to paraphrase again, to kind of piggyback what Bean's saying, what Zito's saying, is that he's absolutely right, obviously. I don't think, I hate to see a guy like, you know, Big Baby Miller could go on to do great things, but you kind of hate to see a Demick scout on Big Baby Miller's resume at this stage of a Demick's career. It's kind of like seeing William Joppy have Roberto Duran's scalp on his resume. That ticks me off to this day. However, something that Zito mentioned I think is very important, he was like, you know, what's this guy doing with his career? Well, you know, what Big Baby's doing is he's treading water waiting for a Joshua shot because Hearn has basically kept using Jermell Miller's or Big Baby Miller's name as, you know, if Joshua debuts in the United States, 9 times out of 10 it's going to be against Big Baby Miller. If he fights an American that's not Wilder, it's going to be Big Baby Miller. So what Big Baby Miller is doing and also Hearn is doing with Big Baby Miller is they're treading water to keep him relevant, to keep him as looking formidable as possible so he could be set up for a potential Joshua fight. The other thing, too, that really got me thinking is we're talking about Dillon White and Luis Ortiz going back and forth. Luis Ortiz was never – Hearn never were offered a fight with Luis Ortiz. It was – apparently discussed. They say Luis Ortiz priced himself out. Luis Ortiz said, well, look, you know, strap your nuts on. We can fight in December. And, you know, Dillon White's like, no, not December. But what's really going on is, if you notice, you got Dillon White and Chisora. So the UK guys are kind of fighting. They're kind of fighting each other, right? You got Chisora fought Dillon White. Dillon White went ahead and fought Joseph Parker. Then you got Ortiz who fought, you know, Deontay Wilder. But outside of that, you know, he hasn't really fought anybody either. What's happening is we almost have like two sets of heavyweight divisions, one on this side of the pond, the other on that side of the pond. What Hearn has basically done, if you've just been paying attention for the last couple years, is essentially run an unofficial, unannounced tournament to see who would be next in line for Joshua for this April date in case the Wilder fight doesn't break, which is why Dillon White is looked at as the next guy. So, no, Dillon White is not going to fight Luis Ortiz because not saying they're freezing Luis Ortiz out, but even when Luis Ortiz was signed with Hearn, which he isn't anymore, Hearn would not promise Luis Ortiz a shot at Joshua because I personally thought at that time Joshua was too green and Luis Ortiz was still fresh. At this point, what he doesn't want to do is risk Josh. It's just kind of like the old Bob Arum trick. He doesn't want to risk his fighter, his money man, to a guy that's not in his stable unless it's a full cash out, like a Deontay Wilder or Tyson Fury. So, yes, you will see him fight possibly Dillon White. Why? Because no matter who wins, Hearn has them both. Just like Bob Arum would do with Manny Pacquiao and Tim Bradley and Jesse Vargas, Hearn is doing the same thing.
Chris?
Makes sense. It makes sense what he just said. You know, and going back to, I'm not a fan of Baby Miller's, and I'm not a fan of Adamant. He was a good cruiserweight, never really a good heavyweight. You know, what's he doing? He's hanging around trying to make a few bucks here and there.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he is a big fan in Poland.
Yeah.
They need a. You know, somebody that's because I can tell you one thing. I went to the Andrew Gallada fight.
I knew that was coming. As soon as you said Poland, I knew you were going to mention Gallada.
I gotta tell you, maybe they need a big man in Poland.
I said, here comes Gallada.
They had 10,000 Polish fans in the stands. They drowned the whole arena out. You couldn't hear anything but them screaming. And they all had red suits on. They all had red uniforms on. They were crazy. They ran down the halls like a herd of buffalo. You better get out of their way. Because they were so, you know. And Gallada wasn't even there yet. And he didn't show the hell up. He was 20 minutes late. They got him there by taxi. And he got conked out in the first round. They were all disappointed. Oh, my God, they were all hyped up, and here Gallada got knocked out in the first round. He was frozen. It looked like he was frozen, scared to death, you know? And, no, wait a minute. That's another fight. That's another fight. He didn't get knocked out in the first round. But that's a real rowdy crowd. And like you say, there's a lot of bullish in Chicago. So, you know, the thing will go over. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. But I'm not a fan of either guy. I've said that before on the show. Maybe Miller doesn't impress me. Dominic's over the hill. I mean, they're really making some bad fights on TV lately. And is there any truth to HBO dropping TV?
Yes.
Yep.
Yep, next year.
They're done.
I wonder who's going to take up the slack.
So, well, Peter Nelson of HBO Sports announced that they were discontinuing boxing as of this year. The last fight was supposed to be the offering of the IBF title middleweight fight between Sergey Derevchenko and Danny Jacobs. However, it is rumored, or not, it's not rumored, they owe Jaime Munguia a fight. So they were looking at possibly, again, after the Jacobs fight, which was announced as their last, they said they could possibly do one. They owe Jaime Munguia a fight, so they're looking at having him headline a card possibly in late November or early December. Also, HBO still has an option on a Canelo fight, so there's talk that that Canelo fight against Rocky Felding could be on HBO as well. But Canelo right now is being bidded on by every major network. I think one of the good things that happens with HBO kind of shutting down its doors, and let's be honest, HBO has been really good for boxing, then it was really bad for boxing. And, the nostalgic part of me is really going to miss HBO, but the fact of the matter is it was time. It was time. I think what's going to happen is now all of a sudden fights that we were looking at that were impossibilities, Gennady Golovkin against Jermall Charlo is a fight that can be made. Like Zito and I said, we don't think it'll be made now, but it's a fight that can be made because now you have these guys, you have Bivol. All of a sudden, he could fight Adonis Stevenson. Some of these guys might not want to sign with a Showtime, but they could sign with Daz, and they're signing with Hearn and different people that are doing business with other organizations. Golden Boy is still having not only does Top Rank have a relationship with ESPN, but so does Golden Boy as well. So you can see a lot of those fights happening. So I think the one kind of good thing about HBO closing down doors is you don't necessarily have two strong sides of the streets. Now you have many sides of the streets, so it kind of forces people to work together. So I think there's a potential we could see some pretty good fights coming out of HBO's doors closing.
Last week there was enough. Go ahead, Chris.
No, it's all right. I was thinking, who the hell would take the reins over? You know what I mean? I'm hoping it's not. We don't have too much of the guy from Philly, and you know what I'm talking about.
Paul Heyman.
Yeah, you know, I'm hoping that now Bob Arum. I don't care for Bob Arum at all. God, him and his son. I don't like either one of them. No, I keep forgetting De La Hoya and the middleweight from Philly.
Oh, Bernard Hopkins. Bernard.
Yeah, Bernard. I keep forgetting
boy.
Bernard.
I don't
think they control all the Mexican fighters, and you're going to get the same damn thing. I think they're going to control. They're going to promote their fighters. It's going to be hard.
Yeah.
You know, it's really going to be hard to make a lot of matches because everybody's protecting their fighters today because there's so damn much money in it. And I don't know what's going to happen. You know, I don't really know. Go ahead.
Great. No, please go ahead, sir.
Go ahead.
I was going to say. Okay, I was just going to say the one kind of good thing is when you said now that HBO is gone, who's going to take over the reins? I think the one good thing is, in a sense, nobody. The only really network left is the PBC on Showtime. They have the rights to Showtime. They just signed another deal with, I believe, CBS or NBC. So they'll still be on TV. But everything's kind of moving away from that pay-per-view model, and it's going into the streaming model. And because it's kind of moving away from the pay-per-view model, it does make fights a little easier to see, a little harder to see if you're not familiar, with the streaming model. But cheaper and easier to see, more fights. So there's actually more fights on, and because of that, you're right, the competition, some of the fights aren't going to be great fights. Like tonight, I don't think we have a great, night of boxing, on tonight, although I'm very much looking forward to seeing Beterbiev fight. He was a guy who was, looked at as a force coming up in the light heavyweight division, the heir apparent to Sergey Kovalev, and he had promotional issues, and he sued Yvonne Michel, and so, he's been out the ring for a while. So I'm looking forward to that. But what you'll get probably, Dr. Chris, are a lot of showcase events as opposed to a lot of competitive fights. But all of a sudden, I think it'll be a little easier to make the big competitive fight because you don't have, well, I'm with HBO and I'm with Showtime and we cannot do business together unless it's $100 million fight. You know what I mean? I think it'll be a little easier to make the better, bigger fight. But because of that, I think we'll sacrifice some of the competitiveness along the way. We'll still get good fights, but I think we will get some showcases.
Yeah, well, how about the Jorge Linares fight? Yeah, I want to ask about the Jorge Linares fight last week. Only lasted three rounds when he absolutely destroyed Abner Cotto. Did you expect that, Ty?
Yeah, absolutely. Abner Cotto is not the level of fighter that Jorge Linares is. What was impressive to me was how big, fluid, and still retaining his quickness Linares looked at 140. I believe he started his career at 126. So, I think his body has grown into 140. He looked physically more comfortable in those three rounds at 140 than he did at 135. I think he may even probably be a little bit more durable. So I think – I don't know how far he can go at 140. I do believe he is in a position to somewhat be put in a mandatory position for Jorge Ramirez's title. I think it would be a good fight that he would lose. He would get real, kind of like the way he lost the DeMarco fight a few years back. It'd be a good fight, but I think Ramirez has too strong a chin and too much of a work rate and too big. But very impressed with how Jorge Linares looked, not because he was against Cotto, but just physically how fresh he looked at that weight.
Mm-hmm. Chris?
Well, what I'm thinking of with these guys that they're fighting at 126, 135, 140, they're coming in the ring 15 pounds heavier. I'm thinking, what the hell is going on? Didn't they make a restriction not too long ago? You can't weigh more than 10 pounds over your weigh-in, the official weigh-in weight. Is that just lightly followed? Nobody pays attention to it.
The IBF has a second day weigh-in policy, but that's it. The other ones haven't followed suit, though they discussed it.
Yeah. I'm looking at these guys are going back to the 50s. I'm looking at some of the old welterweights and the middleweights and so forth. These guys are coming in huge compared to them. It's getting very hard to compare today's fighter with yesteryear's fighter. Not that it matters that much, but you know what I'm saying? These guys are coming in monsters. I can't believe this hydration, how it works. If you go back years ago, if somebody come in 10 pounds overweight, they started yelling, teasing them about the weight gain and the roll, but it doesn't seem to matter anymore. I remember Basilio fought at as a welterweight, 146, 147. Had no trouble making it. He went up to fight Robinson, but he only came in at 154 against Robinson. You know, by today's standards, Cecilia would probably come in at 170, for Christ's sake, you know, or something like that. But I don't think everybody has the ability to fight effectively after they gain 15 pounds in a day. I mean, there's got to be a happy medium somewhere. I just don't know where, because, you know, I'm looking at a featherweight, and he's coming in 139 pounds. He's not a featherweight, you know? And these guys are taller now. The fighters are all taller now. And I'm surprised that they're making the weight, but they look good when they get in the ring. It doesn't seem to affect them. I don't know what doctor worked on that hydration and all that stuff. You know, found the gimmick. But geez, I'm seeing guys now 6'2", you know, fighting at 147, but they're not coming in the ring at that. And it's just taking something away from the stockier fighters, you know, the shorter,
you know,
stockier fighters.
Two quick points on that, Dr. Chris. Number one, I think it's the Nevada State Athletic Commission. If it wasn't them, then I think it may be VADA. I'm not sure who it is, but they banned IVs. And part of the way, you know, these guys were rehydrating was through IVs. And so once they banned IVs, specifically in MMA, or as you like to say, the quadragon, and I forget what you call it, but specifically in mixed martial arts, guys started having big problems with weight cuts the moment they banned IVs. Big problems with weight cuts. But, you know, a lot of these guys come from wrestling backgrounds, so they're used to cutting an inordinate amount of weight. In fact, that was one of the things Floyd Mayweather got flagged for in the Pacquiao fight, because he went back and used an IV to rehydrate. And that was not allowed under, I guess it was USADA. So it's USADA who bans the use of IVs. So I think that kind of can level some of that playing field a little bit as far as the weight gains, as well as the second-day weigh-in. You talked about, you know, not hearing anybody raise a stink, and that's so true. Only one time have I heard a significant stink being raised, and way back, Abdul Gaddy against Reese Mott. Abdul Gaddy came in. They were fighting, I think, at 140. Abdul Gaddy literally looked 2 to 3 weight divisions bigger and more dense. And I just remember, I believe it was on HBO, you know, them complaining, something has to be done about this. And he went, that's because he literally decapitated Joey Gamache. And they were just talking about how dangerous it is, but it's just become common practice. And the only reason why certain things are being looked at now is because fighters have been damn near, and in some cases, dropping dead behind these weight cuts, trying to get that extra size advantage.
Yeah, you know, that's true, because how would you ever eat 15 pounds of food and get in a ring a day later?
Exactly.
I mean, you know what I mean? The IVs must be the thing. They do that with horses. They take their blood out, and they centrifuge it, and then they pump it back into the horse. But it has many, many, many more red cells in it, and the horse can run faster. He's got more oxygen. That's literally what the hell are doing the fighters today. You know,
that's blood doping. They do that to athletes. That's what Lance Armstrong was doing.
Yeah. Wow.
Ty, earlier the program, you had mentioned.
I feel sorry for you. Go ahead, Frank. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Go ahead. Chris, I can wait.
No, I said, I feel sorry. These guys are coming in the ring at 154. That's what their weight class is. They're monsters by the time the bell rings, you know, from the way into the. And I'm thinking, holy Jesus, these guys are full blown middleweights, you know, big middleweights. They're not fighting 154.
The night on the pay per view of the Canelo Alvarez Triple G card that just happened a few weeks ago, David Lemieux weighed 160 for the fight, came in fight night weighing 179. Jaime Munguia weighed in 154 for the fight, came in fight night weighing 175. 21 pounds over the fight weight, Lemieux,
wow,
19 pounds over the fight weight. Both, wow, of them, one fighting, one literally in the ring fighting effectively as a light heavyweight at junior middleweight. The middleweight is literally fighting at cruiserweight. 179 is over light heavyweight. He's fighting at cruiserweight.
Wow. Well, you know what? We've said this. I mean, we've been saying this for years. Boxing does need some kind of control over it because it's getting out of hand. It's really getting out of hand. But, you know, who the hell is going to do it? You know? I don't know if the sport can ever be controlled, you know, by a governing body. One governing body. I don't think it can be.
What
done.
I do like is in certain instances, the sanctioning bodies have begun to work together. Like, so if a champion is an undisputed champion, the sanctioning bodies allow a rotation. So he was say the IBF, then the WBA, then the WBC. They defend, so they go by a rotation. So they do work together in that accord. They also work together sometimes to allow unifications to happen. So, you know, I mean, it's a small thing, but, you know, if you can get them all working together with rules and stipulations, but, you know, so again, like you said, you need a governing body because kind of like the issue we have with Billy Joe Saunders, what he did was legal in the UK, but it's not legal with the Massachusetts State Athletic Commission, who the fight is sanctioned by. So, those are the kind of, now you have different jurisdictions, huh, Dr. Chris? And that makes things really difficult to govern.
No, it's getting tougher and tougher all the time. You say IVs, I mean, IVs come in, when you start dripping that IV fluid in, they put a bag up there. That weighs about 4 pounds. You're gonna have to sit down for 2 hours and to get 15 mm-hmm. pounds in you. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're gonna have to run it fast too. You know, that IV tube is going to have to be flying. But somebody, you know, there's going to have to be some medical restriction somehow to make it a fair fight. I'm seeing guys 6'3", fighting at 147. I mean, Tommy Hearns was a freak at 47. But if you ever looked at Hearns' build, his legs were like toothpicks. He had the long damn arms. He had no upper body as far as his chest and a waistline. I mean, he had no upper body. It was all arms and legs, and they were like a big spider. But I saw Tommy Hearns when he first came to Philly, and they gave him a tough opponent, a little stocky guy. And Christ, when they stepped in a ring, there was a 6-inch, 7-inch height advantage. I'm thinking, wow. You know, now I see it every damn fight. I see guys, you know, fighting at 5'3", and the other guy's 6'2". Doesn't even make a good fight. It's just bad, you know. These poor little guys are coming in, these featherweights, that can't gain. I mean, a short, stocky guy like that can't put that weight on like a tall, rangy guy can. So what I'm getting the weight gain is an advantage to the taller fighter, but not so much to the shorter guys.
Zito and I were watching, Jared Hurd, the junior middleweight champion, the guy at 154, beat Eris Live
He's a monster.
Dr. Chris, we saw a video of this guy outside the ring. Literally a video of him like 2 weeks ago, so he doesn't have a fight schedule, and he just had a T-shirt on. This dude looks like, he literally looks like a defensive end or a linebacker. I may have said, how does this guy make 154? And I think Zito said, how does he make light heavyweight? Like, he's huge. It was mind-boggling that guy can, and we saw him next to the Charlo brothers. And he is just as tall as them, but he is just significantly thicker. It looked like two boxers standing next to a defensive end or a linebacker.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how that guy gets down to 154. That is insane.
And he's got a big head and big shoulders. He's big. I mean, it's not,
God,
you know, he's big. That guy's just plain big. And I saw that when you see them at the ringside. You see these guys out, you know. They're monsters. I don't know. We keep talking about this, but somebody's got to step in there and control it. Do something. But I don't know who's going to do it.
Well, I know the other sanctioning bodies. I think one of the big things, of course, it's just in championship fights, obviously, but or in mandatory fights or rating fights. But the IBF does do a second day weigh in their championship fights. Other sanctioning bodies are talking about following suit in their championship fights. Obviously, it wouldn't be for every fight, and I'm sure they probably would institute it in mandatory positioning fights as well. But I know the other sanctioning bodies have discussed, hasn't happened yet, with following that second day weigh-in policy. So with the second day weigh-in policy, I don't know what the percentage is, but a fighter at the time of the second day weigh-in is only allowed to weigh a certain percentage over what the fight weight is. Just like, they do the 30-day weigh-in before the fight, and a fighter has to weigh, within 10% of the weight or something like that, something to the extent of that. So.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Ty, earlier in the program, you had mentioned Danny Jacobs and Sergey Dibchenko. They're coming together on the 27th of October. Give us your thoughts about that.
I think it's a very good fight. They both have the same management. They both have the same trainer. So unfortunately for Dibchenko, his trainer is going to be cornering his opponent. But Dibchenko has a vast amateur background, so he has a lot to draw on. He also has some things that could truly, truly trouble Daniel Jacobs. A lot of people feel Jacobs has performed a level below since his close loss to Gennady Golovkin. The fact of the matter is Jacobs, at 32, 33 years old, he may have peaked. That Golovkin fight could have been his peak fight, and maybe what we're seeing is kind of what we always thought about Danny Jacobs. Remember, going into the Golovkin fight, not much was expected of him. He exceeded expectations, and so therefore it created certain expectations. So now when we see him perform against Luis Arias, against Maldek Saluki, and he doesn't look that great, it's like, well, he's not that good. This is the Danny I've always seen. I think we saw what Golovkin was too. I don't think it's so much that Danny performed so well against Golovkin. I think he performed very disciplined, and he had certain skills and attributes that allowed him to see that through. But I think we've always seen those skills and attributes in Danny. It'll be interesting because Sergey Dibchenko, for all his skills and attributes, has never fought at this level. He's never fought. Danny Jacobs is going to be the best fighter that he has seen. Right now, he's not the best fighter that Jacobs will have seen. So Jacobs is going to have the edge. He's kind of like he was with Golovkin. He's a lot taller. He's bigger. But Sergey Dibchenko, his feet are more alive than Golovkin's. He faints a little bit more than Golovkin. Not saying he's as good as Golovkin, but he presents a different package. And my esteemed brother Zito really believes he could trouble Danny Jacobs.
Danny Jacobs is another guy that could come in 20 pounds over. When he fought Golovkin, he came in 182 pounds. He was big.
And you're talking about the tall guy getting the advantage. He and Sergey Dibchenko are both going to weigh in 160. Danny Jacobs is like 6'2", 6'1". Sergey Dibchenko is like 5'10". You know what I mean? So he's going to be a significantly bigger guy fight night. And, with Danny Jacobs, against a guy he fears or a guy who can hurt him or a guy of a certain level, because all those guys of a certain level can hurt him, he fights a more cautious kind of keep-away fight, and he uses his size and the threat of his power to kind of take the air out the ball a little bit. He's going to have a little bit harder time doing that with Dibchenko than he did with Golovkin. Not saying that, Dibchenko wins or that he's better than Golovkin, but Dibchenko is a little bit more lively with his feet, more likely to let his hands go where Golovkin didn't. Golovkin's a little bit more calculating. Could play into Dibchenko's hands, could play against him.
Mm-hmm. Good. What's your thoughts, Chris?
Well, he covered it pretty good. He covered it pretty good. I've grown to like Jacob. He's a better boxer than I thought he was. Night he knocked out the former middleweight champion. kid from Brooklyn.
Yeah,
he knocked him out. I didn't know if that was a fluke, a lucky punch, but you know what? He's a better fighter than I thought he was. He's a better boxer than I thought he was. And if he comes in around 180, he's going to be a tough guy. He's going to be a tough guy to beat.
Yeah.
Especially, how tall is the other guy?
Like 5'10", maybe 5'9".
Wow.
Short
middleweight.
Short squat guy. Dr. Chris, they are the exact example of you talking about the taller guy having the advantage as far as putting on that weight.
Yeah. He can carry it better. He can distribute it better. I mean, that's mind-boggling to me, that weight. I mean, that's just, I know when you're sparring a gym, and you spar with a sparring partner 15 pounds heavier than you, it's pretty damn hard. When he throws a good hard jab, it's hard to hold back. You know, and you go to put your right hand up the block, and next thing you know, he's knocking the back of your hand in your face with all that weight.
And even when those guys hit you on the shoulder, it moves you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It moves you. So like,
yeah,
you
they
try
lean
to,
on him when you. Yeah.
Yeah.
When you're trying to throw them around and lean on you, or leaning on you, by the 10th round, your butt's dragging, handling them guys that weight. You know. I think you know, maybe they'll come up with a solution somehow, because I saw that lightweight fight where that I think it was
Gaddy and Gamache,
the guy from Maine. He was from Maine. Christ, it looked like guy, like you said, three divisions up.
that was horrible.
He damn near got killed. That guy, he damn near killed him.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was dead when he hit him. He blew him the hell out of there. But somebody's going to get hurt. That's a lot of weight
between,
to give away.
Between that and PEDs, yeah. I mean, between that and PEDs, it's almost assault. You know what I mean, Jesus?
Yeah.
Well, guys,
yeah,
we're up against our time clock here, Chris.
Okay.
I want to thank you for coming on again. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. I'll talk to you sometime during the week. I did try to get a hold of Tex, and he didn't answer his phone, but I'll try him again later on in the week.
There's something wrong with his phone. I try to reach him,
and
about 2 days later I'll get a phone call from him, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know whether they got a time limit, whether they just buy the
minutes.
I don't know what the hell they're doing with their phone.
Probably what it is,
I have a difficult time reaching him, I'll give him a call. I'll probably use him one day this week.
Yeah.
So.
I want to
right,
let everybody know
good
that.
Good talking to you.
We
this is Dr. Chris.
Have
you have a good one. Be safe.
All right. Take care, buddy.
In 2 weeks, we're going to have a good friend of ours, Mr. Keith Thurman, will be on with us. I talked to Keith today. Mr. One Time. And he's raring to go. So I won't go into any details, but he was in a mood today. But Ty, thanks very much for coming on. I appreciate it every time you and Zito get on and really help me out here. And it's always fun. Hope we can get together again soon. And we're gonna. You want to lead us out?
Hey, it's been great talking to you guys. Always great talking to you, Dr. Chris Z. Missed Brady this week, so tell him I said hi. Always in memory of Coach Bell. Bob is our co-pilot. You guys enjoy your week and be safe.
See?
Another wonderful show. Want to thank Dr. Cliff. Want to thank you, Booking Time. These shows are definitely a memory of Bob and Coach Mel. If anyone wants to have any fighting words, please do call.
I know Z has an awful lot of people on this line that love to listen to him and listen to the way he breaks things down. The reason we limited things today is Z suffers sometimes from migraine headaches, and tonight was one of those nights. So we tried to keep his exposure as little as possible. But when he did talk, he did a fantastic job, as always. So, Z, hope you're feeling better, and I hope you have a good week. Ladies and gentlemen, this program is brought to you. I like that, ZF Hutton. These programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces and the men and women of police and fire services. When you're out there and you see somebody in uniform, please let them know that you know they're there. This is very dangerous times, both domestically and in foreign countries. These programs are dedicated to those who lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police Department, Patrolman Arnolfo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Chief Al Hogle, Longboat Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Department, Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Hillsborough County Deputy Chief Charlie Kotloff, Delaware State Trooper Sergeant Rodney Bond, Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Jerry Ficus, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Ardeth Hope, Wilmington Fire Department, FDLE Special Inspector Vinny Galaccio, Delaware State Trooper Stephen Ballard, Kissimmee Patrol Officer Matt Baxter, Kissimmee Sergeant Sam Howard, Captain Matt Letourneau, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Bill Gentry, Highlands County Sheriff's Department, Deputy Clay Zerba, Clay County Sheriff's Department. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, sometime we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the rose rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hallow of his hands. Good night. God bless and have a great weekend.
Shem alek ma yelama, shem ma hezahir ma, son ashen evorat fet, hakuig again ma yelama.
County Dispatch to 1999. County Dispatch to 1999. All units be advised, 1999 she responded to his last emergency, and God rest his soul.
Bob, we love you and we miss you.